not alright. Welcome to another thrilling season of Truth and Reconciliation. It's the Elwood Famous Football League Podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. It is great to have you with us. Peter, how are you, sir?
I'm doing fantastic. Really happy to be here. Yeah. Really glad that we're coming off of, we just drafted yesterday.
Yeah, this is
quick turnaround. We don't usually get to do it such a quick turnaround. So, it's very fresh in my mind. So, very excited to be here to talk about the draft. And, I guess an apology in advance, the way things look right now, scheduling for broadcast episodes might be more difficult this season than any other. So
what's on what's on your docket?
Just coaching three different youth sports teams at the same time, and they're trying to squeeze 8 games for each of those three teams into a 5-week window here. So like the next 5 to 7 weeks, depending on how the playoffs go, is just going to be really occupied with 3 to 4 practices a week plus 3 to 5 games per week for all my kids, and I'm signed up to be the coach for all of them, so we can make this schedule and actually work and actually attend all those games. So it's gonna be difficult, as well as it being the absolute busiest time of the year for my work. So I'm very glad that we got to squeeze this in, because it does feel like squeezing it in a very tight window, and we're threading that needle. So glad to be here.
Well, good. Well, I'll do whatever I can. I am self-employed and I don't sleep. And so, like, whatever you need to do, you let me know. I'll make it happen. Otherwise, I'll make sure to bring in a chain of guests, because we have plenty of eager perfect. League members to jump on board too. Not to say that I would be happy to do it without you. So I hope we can work it out.
Well, we definitely need Frank on here at some point to introduce the introduce him as the new lead member.
Yeah, he's excited and willing, and I punted on having him here on this episode, obviously, because it is the draft grade episode. And I didn't want the ratings confusion, because the ratings was going to go up. I didn't want him to get like an excitedly big head about, wow, my episode was really no. You just would have piggybacked the our best episode, and we
that's a very good call.
It's pretty sacred. So yeah. But you guys had a good time this weekend. Speaking of sacred, how was your holy time together?
We did have a good time. Yeah. We did all the things. We met up for a barbecue lunch on Friday, and then we played golf, and then we ate tacos for dinner on Saturday, and we played poker, and then we got up and we had some
on Friday. We played poker Friday, right?
Yeah, we played poker Friday night. Yep, and then we got up and had a little breakfast and did the draft, and then had some more barbecue at the house for lunch on Saturday, and it was overall awesome time. So
meat sweats kick in around 11 p.m. Saturday. We're just exhausted.
Actually, I wasn't. Actually, I came back and I was not exhausted. We got pretty decent sleep, wrapped up poker and got to bed around 1 and woke up at like 8 on Saturday. So pretty solid 7 hours. I'm used to going on 5 or 6. So I felt rested, and the draft was enjoyable. It wasn't too taxing, and everything went great in my world.
All right. Okay. It's interesting that you said that, because I had a feeling, and I almost didn't want to voice it. Is the draft getting easier?
That's a good question. I think that was actually one of the overall themes I wanted to mention.
Okay.
I don't think it's getting easier.
Right.
I actually think it is harder. But
go on.
I think we're getting older, and like I know for me, I'm getting busier. It seems, and I think everyone has, gotten busier, and other life things are taking a little bit of priority.
Mm-hmm.
So the overall theme I was going to bring to you is I think there was generally less preparation across the league coming into this year's draft than we have had any other year. So I don't know if that made it easier, or at least in my case, what I experienced was my expectations were significantly lowered for myself. And so I left feeling much happier with my draft than I have any other year.
Well, that may be the case. Yeah.
I did not toil over 18 different versions of a strategy or a plan and then realize at the end of the day, like, oh, this was all crap and it all went to, you know, went to hell in the first three picks anyway. I just was like, I'm just going with the flow. And so I came away from it like, I went with the flow and, you know, came out with about the kind of team I expected instead of trying to, you know, pigeonhole and slot different guys in different spots. And I didn't really have any set guys I was targeting or anything like that. So it wasn't like my draft revolved around, I have to hit these guys or I don't have to hit these guys. And so, so I don't know if it was, I don't know if that jives with what you're saying about it being easier or, I think some guys thought it was a challenging draft and they, you know, several guys were vocal about saying they don't like their team coming out of it, which I think happens just about every year.
I don't think pandering starts as soon as the, you know, the draft block over.
Naturally.
Yeah, you gotta start, the old sacrificial heart of hearts right off the bat. But, no, and I don't mean easier. Like I'm sitting on my high podium trying to say, man, I'm just such the expert that this is just a walk in the park and I'm playing with children. Like, that's not what I mean. I kind of meant the more so my tone and approach, and it felt like it was a little bit more shared. And maybe I think you said it well. Well, no, you didn't. You just said we're getting older. I would have preferred you say we're getting wiser and more mature, because I think that is what it is. Every conversation I feel like I'm having with my wife as we talk about our life and our goals and everything, it all comes back to the fact that, man, we are getting stupid. Freaking older, like all roads lead to being older. We had a little date weekend this weekend, and we were sitting at a bar up at a hoity-toity restaurant in a hoity-toity community called the Woodlands. And the bartender was 24 years old, and I asked him, some friendly questions and asked him where he's at in life, and he said, "Well, you know, compared to you guys, I'm just a young whippersnapper." I was like, "Hang on. What? When did I start looking like your dad? That's what I want to know." Like, so all these conversations are coming back to we're no longer in the age bracket that we used to be in. And I think that with that maturity comes, we're no longer cowboys. We're starting to become sage men. And maybe with sage men, we're more tired or just we have better set priorities. We know what we value, we know what we care about. And while we appreciate our community and value fantasy football and being good at it, it no longer requires the extent of sacrifice in preparation, maybe. Or rather, we just kind of know how to go for value and are able to go in with less expectation about who is on our team and more expectation about how we want to build our team. Maybe that's it. Maybe we're just running our play. Because I'm with you. So. I did not have a whole lot of targets. I had some maybes. I knew, you know, some keepers and sleepers, and I knew that some of my targets would be contingent on who I got in my, you know, top tier spots based on what I needed in the backfill or what I needed in handcuff. But other than that, like, it was just a range of players and looking for value and trying to play the game and make sure that nobody else got away with a steal, which was I was unsuccessful, but. It just feels a little bit different this year, and I'll be curious to maybe we ask that question to our future guests too, because I want more feedback on that. It just felt a little different, a little bit more of a easygoing approach. I wasn't exhausted or stressed afterwards. I felt good about my team, but I was also not like didn't go perfect. So thanks for the feedback. I'm glad.
I think it also helped. It helped that we had fewer tech issues than what we've had in the past as well. That always adds some stress to it. I think there was more confidence in the system and the technology in that we didn't have to worry about it. So that was good. I think we had to undo one pick because of a fat finger. Yep.
I don't know. I think he might have valued him at $140, but yeah.
I had to do a quick pause at one point to change the position limits settings because I was not allowed to take any more wide receivers again, as happened 2 years ago as well. Apparently, I need to do that every year with the draft on Sleeper because whenever I set the keepers for the lead, anytime I set a keeper, it counts against my team's positional limits.
But nobody else's.
nobody else's. This only affects me.
It's so such a weird glitch.
If there are six wide receivers kept, then that counts as six of my wide receivers.
Oh, you mean our keepers affect your draft? Oh, yep. they've got something, some adding formula in their database isn't filtering some by
so, like,
manager.
I think there were seven wide receivers kept this year. So once I had three wide receivers, I was not allowed to take any more, or I couldn't nominate one. I couldn't bid on one. Oh. And so thankfully this happened before and I knew what it was to pause the draft, go change our lead settings and resume it. And everything's fine. It was a quick change. So, but stuff like that has been a major stressor before, right? So yeah, so we're just gaining experience and wisdom and applying it. And so yeah, I just, in that way, it is making the whole process a little bit easier on our mental and emotional health.
Yeah, I agree. Well, good assessment, good take. I feel good about it. I'm excited. Now, a discovery was made last time we did this episode. Speaking of prep, in that I learned on the fly that I was doing a little bit too much prep in my draft grading, and maybe you weren't doing quite a bit enough, and that there was some winging it going on.
I don't think we learned that I wasn't doing enough. I think we learned that I was doing it on the fly as we go through the episode. And that is exactly how I plan to do it now. It's very organic that way. And I don't have any set mathematical formula for how to grade a team, but I'm going to try to go through and ladder people accordingly to it's not kind of being like, how complete is this team, and in some ways it's a little bit, how much do I want to face them or do I not want to face this team? You look at a team and say, hey, I'm glad I'm facing them in week one, or I really hope I don't face them in week one.
Well, truth be told, I had, you know, years past programmed an export for Poker Face to give me a little bit of a grade draft with a curve. And I, along with some extra variables that I could throw in to make it a little bit more my own, like my own feedback in it. And truthfully, it really doesn't apply. Like, I'm not using that tonight, because if I were to, I would either have to give everybody a spread between an A+ and a B+, and I don't want to do that. Or if I curved it, that would mean that people who fairly would be getting good grades would be getting C- or Ds on a curve. And that just doesn't seem fair to me either. So I ditched that, and instead I'm going with more of a, I mean, I still tried to run it through like a bit of a fair deviation, but it's much more objective, I think, based on just upside and downside. It's totally subjective based on my opinion, but it's objective in that it's, I hope to be consistent as opposed to, you know, pushing people into a grade they don't really deserve simply so I can have a distribution. So we'll see.
Yeah,
I'll be curious to see how it compares to yours.
Yep. I had a couple more general things I wanted to discuss before we get to the specific draft grades. What I was thinking was, I feel like there's overall less prep than normal. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I noticed was, it didn't seem like there were any crazy strategies coming into this year, whether it was someone with a really odd keeper pick or a really targeted approach in the draft we've seen before.
Charles.
Charles jumps to mind first, but I'll say Brock has geared his team in the past towards who has the best schedule in the fantasy football playoffs, or, you know, stacking a particular team. Charles last year drafted three of the top four quarterbacks, or, you know, whatever it was, and really threw off the quarterback market. And there wasn't anything crazy this year, which might also go to what you were saying of, was the draft easier this year? It might have been easier because it was more by the book and a little bit more expected, and not anything that was, you know, off the wall of like, I don't know what to do now.
Yeah,
so
there wasn't an agent of chaos.
Yeah,
that's a really good point. Okay, that's a good point. Here I was thinking that I was just getting better at it. Nope, that's a good point.
So I hesitate to make that point, especially in light of your feeling of Buzzy, because that just throws down the gauntlet for someone next year to be that agent of chaos for the sole mission of watching making sure we don't have an easy draft.
Yeah. Some men. Oh. Yep. Well, oh. And you know, granted, I wish that Michael Franca would have had a harder draft. You know, I feel like there's a cutting of teeth experience. Like, now I say that there's one. Then again, Chewy won his first year. So I guess my wishful thinking is that you're playing with the big boys now and you should feel it. And if you didn't feel it, then I'm a little disappointed. But, well, we'll see.
Well, we'll have to check the tape there. You froze on me a little bit, and I don't know if it's my connection or if that's going to end up playing out on the recording. So just heads up, I missed the last little bit of what you said there. I heard you wish Franca had a harder draft, and I think that is a good point. You know, Franca came in, first-time league member. He did really well. And it was mentioned during the draft that we have had first-time league members do well. I think Chewy won it the year he first came into the league.
Right.
I think Charles did pretty well his first year.
No, he did win 2019. Wasn't that his first year?
Was that his first year?
Or was it his second year?
I've got the standings history pulled up. No, that was his second year. So his
first year,
I think his first year he struggled out of the gate, but finished strong, and then he won his second year. And I think like Brian and Jared Fleming struggled really... I think they struggled their first year, but I think they both did a lot better their second year. So it'll be interesting to see how how that newbie trend goes.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad we got Frank in the lead. You know, obviously he's already shown that he is in it, and he's getting incorporated into the group. So it's nice when you get a new lead member and they are folding in right away, and in some way everyone develops their persona, and I think he's already developing a bit of a persona. So
if not reluctantly, he's put his foot in his mouth with a couple of misunderstandings. But you know what? He's a scout, man. He is an NCAA guy. He loves college football, and so he's one to watch out for in terms of recruiting. And he watches the movement of those pipelines like nobody else I know. And the other thing is that he's not a stranger to auction draft. Like I think Charles in 2018, that was his very first time to ever auction draft.
Yeah.
And the Franca actually commissions our sister league. So he's running the only other league that I'm in, which is an auction league, which is a point that I wanted to raise. He led us through a live auction, as in we were all in the room. There were all, I don't remember how many, there were at least 15 guys there. Some were just hanging out. But we had an auctioneer in front of the screen, and he ran the cheat sheet of availability, and he, you know, we pressed in snake order nomination, and he just managed the gavel, if you will, going once, going twice, and it was awesome. And we had all the snacks and all the hangouts, and I was like, man, the next time we can do that. Now the hard part would be doing that would be impossible unless we had everybody present. Like that is the caveat for sure. But but it certainly was fun, and it definitely put another bug in me going like, oh man, if we could ever get to that point, that would be pretty slick, because it was everything you and I had talked about it being in the past. It was great.
That's amazing. And we may have to try to change up our draft time a little bit, get it planned out further in advance, try to get see if we can work out the schedule and get more people in person. Yeah. We had a great time, those who were able to gather. I love that Brock and Scott were able to get together and be in the same place. But it's always, you know, just it's more fun to be in the room with everybody, and we definitely don't want anyone feeling like they're totally isolated and left out. Which goes to one other theme that I had was we did have an auto bidder this year. Unfortunately, Michael, I texted him like right as the draft season started to check in with him, and he said there was a death in the family, so he wasn't able to join. So he was on auto bidder for most of the draft, if not all of it. There were times where the auto bidder wasn't really working, which was kind of weird, where it's like it should be bidding right now, but it's not. And then other times it would kick on, and it would start bidding. So that was a little bit of an agent of chaos.
No kidding.
To some degree, but yeah. Definitely a lot easier to navigate because it was predictable.
Yeah, you control those. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so I did feel bad. There were a few times where my bidding and nomination strategy was solely to get his auto bidder out of the way. Because it does mess up, like when you're trying to find value later on the draft and stuff, it really messes things up if you've got an auto bidder sitting there that basically hasn't spent any money the whole time. And then it screws up everyone else who's, trying to craft their draft in just a certain way. And that hurts the experience. So, there were definitely some running backs I threw up on the block early that I was like, I have no interest in them, and Sleeper has them way overpriced in my opinion. So, here you go, auto bidder, bid away. And yeah, he ended up with like five running backs that, he didn't need. So I do feel bad about that, but that was just the reality of that's how we had to do it to make it the best we could out of a bad situation. So it was unfortunate that he had gone on auto bidder. And then I think we had some guys who had to drop late for family obligations as well. And auto bidder came into play there too. But that's later in the draft, it wasn't as big of an impact. But
right. That's
something we haven't had as much of in recent years. And I think next year need to remember to get the scheduling done earlier and try to coordinate as much as possible so that we've got a little bit more availability both in person and virtually as much as we can.
Yeah, and it's worth it because the value of the weekend together, even if it's just one night, is just off the chain. It's so much fun. The golf, the poker, the meat, and of course the draft.
lots of meat.
And so much meat. The sausage fest.
Okay, two more general themes for me. One, right. I felt like quarterbacks went for less money than I expected this year.
They did.
Tight ends felt like they were more expensive than I expected this year. And at some point, I guess the last point I would make is I thought there just ended up being like a thirst for wide receivers at some point, but there are also some running backs that went late that were pretty expensive. So I think the last point there, so quarterbacks were cheap, tight ends were expensive, and then there was just a lot of money that was held until late in the draft where, we start the draft with everyone having all this like value from their keeper, basically. And then that money wasn't spent early on the top tier guys, and so it was held. And then so later in the draft, I know I got to a point where it's like, oh, I have money left, but there's no good players left to spend it on. And so then you're spending more on guys than you thought you would, but it's like, well, if I don't buy them, if I don't, pay this price, it's not like there's anyone else left for me to take, so I might as well spend it now. And so I think that was that. I'll say that's the last general theme that I was picking up on is there are a lot of teams sitting there with money late. And then we saw some really odd prices towards the end of the draft.
For sure. Yeah, I totally agree with you. It was different in that regard. And the only other kind of trend that I felt like I noticed was that of tight ends. It felt very different compared to years prior. And I guess I know that, there's a lot of argument about Kelce getting older, but I just feels like it was either you secured one or two early, and then it was a ghost town, and the allocation towards tight end just felt a lot more conservative this year. Like, it just wasn't as bum rush as it's been in the past towards it. Like, I feel like it was almost like a snake draft in the past where, as soon as you break that position, it's just an onslaught towards it. And it didn't feel it. Maybe that's just the depth issue this year comparatively in terms of PPR. But it just felt very different in the tight end approach this year. What do you think?
Maybe you're right. Maybe there's just less top heavy on the tight ends. Mm-hmm. And I know two of them were kept this year.
Right. That's cool.
Which, could have been a factor. We had no tight ends kept last year. And then we've never had more than two kept in a season, except for going back to 2017. So with two being kept this year, maybe that changed things a little bit. If I look at dollars spent on tight ends this year and exclude the keepers, there's actually less spent on Titans this year than last year. Though I guess this year there, you know, there would have been 10 non-keepers drafted. Last year there were 12 drafted. But the difference was $214 spent last year versus $172 this year. So it, you know, it's a $42 difference. And those two keeper tight ends wouldn't make that up entirely. But I think Kelce went for like 29 or something like that. And that was the most expensive one. I think in years past, Kelce's gone for over 40. And, you know, some of the, like Mark Andrews was like a $35 type player as well. And so I guess the top tight ends just didn't go for as much. And there were a lot more in that 12 to 24 ish dollar range that went. And I think you're right. It's kind of like you got to get one of those guys or you're really stuck. So maybe it was just my position in the draft of not having one of those guys. I was like, man, why all these guys keep going for so much? I was hoping to get some of them for less than 10. And it's like, I guess I can't do that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Well, good observations on the draft, good observations on the trends this year. It definitely was different. I think that's my summary, is that this was a different draft compared to, I feel like for a couple years in a row, it always felt the same. It was like high prep, high intensity, try to get exactly what I want and get frustrated when, you know, the bits and pieces fell apart, and pick on the one or two managers that had like a, call it a game or a draft engine, call it a draft ending mistake, whether it was a getting hosed with an overbid or trying to price enforce and getting stuck with a player or bidding, you know, inappropriately or, you know, making a mistake, whatever it is. Sometimes the domino effect of that can just wreck the rest of the draft because you just added dollars and then your plan just goes to pot. So it just, maybe when we get into the conversations with the rest of the league managers, we'll find out the nitty gritty, but this one just felt a lot different than last year's, and that's, or in years past entirely. And I think that's kind of my takeaway. I think there's plenty of variables that we've discussed that kind of have spoken to why, but I really did enjoy it. Like I did like the approach better. It felt not easy, but it just felt lighter. And it felt like I could, like you said, it's kind of like my golf game this last year, man, when you lower your expectations and you have a lot more fun. Yeah. Lot more fun. That's, and you celebrate your wins.
I still often quote the DVD cover for Tommy Boy that I had that said, if at first you don't succeed, lower your expectations.
Yeah. Well, I'm playing bogey fantasy football this year, gents, and I love it. Well, with that, shall we dive into some draft grades?
Let's do it.
I think it's tradition to go in nomination order. Is that true?
Yeah. Right. Yep, that's what we'll do. So first up, Jared Lorenz, thankfully, you know, I think also some maturity in the league. There could have been a lot of controversy about his keeper pick because he did screw up and had the wrong guy locked in at the keeper deadline. So he says, right? Yeah. The conspiracy theories abound based on depends on how well he does this year. There could be some very strong conspiracy theories, lots of screenshots taken over text message conversations for documentation purposes, with timestamps and everything included. But he did keep Miami running back for $3, which is obviously the right pick instead of Cooper Kupp for 30 something that he had originally picked. And then from there, he, I believe, took the first player with CD Lamb at $70. I think that was the first one off the board. He also took Drake London and Xavier Worthy, Jackson Smith and Jigba, DeAndre Hopkins, Dalton Kincaid, and then his quarterback is Jordan Love. So, yeah. How would you start evaluating that draft?
Yeah, I always love seeing big dollars go early. I think CeeDee Lamb went for a heck of a lot. I dare say that I've got renewed expectations or renewed expectations is a hard word, but maybe renewed sense of maybe for the Dallas Cowboys. And so I get that. that money spent there. And also just our value of high-end wides has just continued to tip the scale. So he's got the wide receiver depth, Lamb, London, Hopkins. I mean, it is a good, solid PPR stack. It really is. And because of that, obviously his trade-off is he's a little thin on running back. I wouldn't say that he's, he went crash and burn thin. Like, he's just unproven in running back. That's his issue. And because of that, I gave him a B+. I think he's got a good draft, but if his top wides are underperforming, then he's vulnerable.
I think I think you're right. This is a pretty typical Jared Lorenz draft, and it's heavy spend on wide receivers. Yeah, I didn't even mention it. He has six wide receivers. Yes, he can only play five.
Right.
We got three wide receivers and two flex spots.
Well, maybe he was just trying to lock yours up, like the last time. Maybe he is the agent of chaos. He got his keeper in late. He knows that if he overdrafts on one position, you can't draft that position. Like, he's this savvy, I'm telling you.
Well, I think this was the biggest case of everyone has a lot of money left and there's no good players left. Deontay Johnson joined for $20. If you don't spend that $20 on Deontay Johnson, you're not spending that $20.
Sure, use it or lose it.
Right. Because you won't need it for anyone else who's available at that point in the draft. Yeah. So, very deep at wide receiver. I really like Dalton Kincaid at tight end for 16 because, I mean, he could be the top target for Josh Allen this year. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a great buy. I think the quarterback position will be interesting. You know, that it's a very classic strategy of go less expensive quarterback. So you got Jordan Love for $5. Yeah. Good quarterback, has a lot of weapons to throw to, showed in the playoffs last year that he was really good. It'll be interesting to see if he can repeat that. And one thing that I'm noticing over your recent history is having a really good quarterback in that, top three or four can give you a pretty big leg up on the competition. I don't know if it was so true last year, but I think just looking at the projected scores, when you've got a 4-point edge on your quarterback being projected for 24, 25, 26 points, and you're up against someone who's projected for 20, 21, 22, yeah, it does make a big difference in terms of, it seems, what your upside is as a team. So, I think Jared will have a really high floor team because he has so many good receivers in a PPR league. And it will be really interesting to see what he does with his second running back spot, because I don't know who his second running back is going to be at this point. There's a hole there. And then we can see if Jordan Love can sustain what he was doing in the playoffs last year and even take another step forward. I agree with your B+ rating. I think that's exactly where he deserves to be, as a high floor, very solid team.
Yeah, I'll add one thing. The draft chop here, and knowing Jared's brain and what he's thinking about short term and long term, he knows where the value is in our leagues, and he's kind of playing the lottery. Like, if you can take the hit on having unproven running back depth, if you have a dice roll of wide receivers for trade fodder later on, because you only need one of them to hit into the WR3 tier, maybe even the WR2 tier, to a team that is really, really broken in wide receiver. And then you got some trade fodder that you can backfill your running backs with. Like, I think he's that savvy. Like, I give him props for his plan of going, if I'm going to draft anybody, it's going to be, let's scattershot the mid-tier value of wides, and maybe later, whichever one hits, I can transform to backfill RB as I need to.
But that makes a lot of sense.
But as his team stands, week one playability, I think he's a solid B+.
I like it. All right, next on the nomination list was Brian, and he kept Chris Olave for $14. He started with Amon-Ra St. Brown at $61. He's at Calvin Ridley for $12 to round out the wide receiver core. Beyond that, got Khalil Shakir. Is really the only other wide receiver of note. He did go with a two tight end strategy. He got Trey McBride and George Kittle.
Yep.
And then at running back, he's at Pacheco, Connor, Harris, and then the rookie, Jaden Daniels, at quarterback. So, you know, always interesting when you got the two tight ends that you're kind of banking on as one of them being your flex. And this, you know, I think solid team overall here. I don't know if anything jumps off the page at me in terms of, you know, a slam dunk top tier kind of team. What do you think?
I gave this like a theme of, I mean, I think he's balanced. I think it's a risky balance is what it is. He went with a balanced draft that has reliable core wides. He's got some kind of steady points coming from Pacheco or Connor. His running backs are kind of mediocre. I'm worried about his championship run. Like, I don't think he has firepower here because it's not built on firepower. It's built on steadiness and balance. And he's got the risk of, like you said, kind of the try to get a cheap wide receiver in the form of a tight end in a flex. So it's just some risk. But I appreciate the approach because if you're trying to execute a balanced draft, this is how you do it. Like, you look at his budget and how he spent it. He did it really well. He got, you know, the big wide receiver in our league, $61. And so that's not bad. He's got his top running back was $32. And so he went balanced. Obviously he pushed wide over RB, which in a PPR, it's not the greatest idea, except for, as we've discussed ad nauseum, the value of our wides has gone way, 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 way up in our league in the past couple of years. So, overall I gave him a B and just consider it a balanced draft that has, mediocrity at risk, but also great upside depending on how his core wides perform.
Yeah. I like his three wide receivers. I like Olave. I love
great
Amon Ross St. Brown.
Great keeper for sure.
Yeah. And then I think Ridley showed he still has some talent. And actually talking with Brian after the draft, he made a really good case for why Ridley will do really well in Tennessee. That I liked. So I think those three wide receivers are really good. Beyond that, it's a little, I have a little bit of a harder time, supporting everything here. You know, like having James Conner and Najee Harris in there are both two running backs that just kind of leave a bad taste in my mouth. Like, oh, this is the year that they're going to get hurt, or like, it's crazy to think, but like they're getting too old now. I don't even know how old they are, but I can't imagine Najee's actually that old. But he feels like he runs like an old man, which Brian himself said. And it just feels like they're due to get hurt and not going to keep it up. So, but you know, losing a running back isn't the end of the world. It just, you know, those two guys are in starting spots. It's just very lukewarm for me. And then here's, you know, Jaden Daniels, or, you know, Kirk Cousins, and you know, some combination of those two at quarterback. This is where I feel like when you're going up against a Josh Allen or a Pat Mahomes or a Lamar Jackson, you're going to be really behind the eight ball. Yes. Because I don't see, you know, Jaden Daniels, or Kirk Cousins being able to keep up with that pace, even if Daniels hits and he's, you know, able to be a really great rushing quarterback, he just doesn't have the weapons there in Washington to you know, also throw for a bunch of passing yards and touchdowns. At least that's how it seems to me right now. So in that way, I'm gonna go with a B minus grade here for Brian. So I'm there with you, but I think I'm not quite as big of a fan. But it's still a B, you know, a B level draft in my opinion.
Yeah. Yep. I think that's a good take, and I think that's a good fair grade.
All right. Okay, we've got you up next. So you kept Tyreek once again, paying the additional price for keeping him a second time. You got Tyreek for $47. Other wide receivers, you took Ayuk for 26, Keon Coleman for 10, George Pickens for 14. Not much to say wide receiver beyond that. You got Etienne and Derrick Henry at running back, Joe Burrow at quarterback, and Dallas Goedert at tight end. So since you did actually talk about your own draft here, we get to hear your thoughts. Yeah. Go on and tell us your thoughts here.
Well, thanks. Well, I'd be remiss not to talk about Brock first, given that he wrote my script for me. And so, or granted, he found my playbook, I think is what happened, or he caved and used Poker Face this year after all that talk about anti-algorithms. Because we apparently were targeting the same players, and or he just made it a point to drive my my bids up. But it did seem like we had done our homework together. My approach this year was, like we've discussed, a little bit looser than usual. I felt like I had a range of targets with a range of budget. That was the other thing, too, that I did this year. Instead of limiting myself to budgets that I knew that in past history I would fudge a little and have to try to flex on the fly, I gave myself ranges per positional budget, and that made a big difference in terms of my approach. Nice. It just opened up the flexibility a lot. Like things like, oh, my quarterback is a $10 to $15 quarterback. You know, just basic things like that. Where I could maintain discipline on the ceiling, but give myself some flexibility without absolutely undercutting the rest of my draft. I didn't have a lot of great other keeper options, and dollar for dollar in our league, it just feels good to get a top end wide receiver for a discount. So I'm like, why would I not do that? I know it's the easy way out, but it makes sense to me. I do think that I have a pretty balanced team with plenty of elite names in it, like Hill, Henry, Etienne. So I think I'm strong. I am weakest in tight end. I wasn't expecting to get Goddard. I didn't want him. That was not my target for tight end. And when I picked up Derrick Henry, which was not part of the plan at all, I was really not planning on getting that high end of an RB2, and I got him on value. I felt like it was a good pick, but it really limited my ability to get the remaining positions that I wanted in my targets, and that hurt, like my tight end target and then a couple of my sleeper picks, which I didn't have the extra dollar or two later in the draft to, you know, get the $8 or $10 sleeper pick that we were all fighting for. I did get my handcuffs in a couple of spots. I got Adam Thielen on accident, but I'm like, all right, well, we'll see how he does. That's fine. $2, great. Why not? I always loved him. And I overall, when I look at my team, I think it's middle of the top contenders. So for that reason, I gave myself an A. It's not the A+. I'm not top two or top three, but I'm right there in the running in the strongest of our league. So I gave myself an A.
Yeah. It was another theme I didn't say, but I think Derrick Henry fits with this theme, is these like older fantasy players who have been really good in years past, and maybe people are just like tired of them, mm-hmm. or they're on new teams, and so it's like new situation, you're not really sure what's going on. Henry, this is his first year in Baltimore. It's like, who knows? Is he going to be really good? Maybe not. Has he, carried the ball too many times? And is his ridiculously incredibly strong body going to finally give out this year? Who knows? So it just seems like, it's probably a guy that should have gone for more. We'll talk about later, but Joe Mixon and Davante Adams definitely fit in that mold as well, where it's like, these guys have been around a long time, and now why are they going for so cheap? So I thought Derrick Henry was a good buy there. I think keeping Tyreek was definitely the right decision. He's such a freak and such a valuable fantasy asset. I think I wasn't a huge fan of where you spent some dollars, like Keon Coleman for 10. I think it's not certain that he's going to be the guy in Buffalo.
I know.
Brock.
Brock.
George Pickens for 14. Might be good.
I like that one.
That could go, one way or another. And then you got Chase Brown for 8. But I think that was on your auto bid.
That was an auto bid. I logged in and saw Chase Brown and went, oh, yeah. And of course, England. Yeah. And I was like, oh, good. Yeah, that's good. maybe that's my keeper option for 2026.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. And then like you took Jahan Dotson, who just got traded to Philadelphia, for $3. And I'm not sure how he sees the field in Philadelphia very much, actually, with AJ Brown and Devontae Smith and Goddard there. And then, like AJ Dillon for $1 when he's out for the year. So, you know, it's like with the opportunity that you had, the assets you had, the resources you had, there were some, you know, finer points. I'm like, that missed the mark. And so, you know, in the end, I think it does hurt the overall quality of the team to some degree, though. I can't say there's a huge hole anywhere here, except for maybe that second flex spot. But I think that just ends up weakening the you know, the wide receiver three spot, the
right.
first flex spot. That, you know, like everything's just a little bit weaker than where you'd probably want to be to start the year. So I'm going to give this one a C+ in my book. Next,
lesson be learned about the auto bid and the auto pick. I bailed out, and I was trying to stick around. I had one more nomination, and I had one more target. And I went toe-to-toe, and apparently you and Chewy and Brock all wanted the same target that I had teed up to there towards the end. And I lost him. I think he went for $10. My max bid was $8. So when I didn't get him and I had to bow out, there were 5 picks left on my bench that the auto bidder filled for me. And it was like, well, here we go. I love my starting roster, and we'll make hay with the rest, I guess. Yep. And so let the lesson be learned. If you rely on the auto bidder in an auction draft, you're going to get hosed. You're going to get the Dillons that are out for the season, and you're going to overpay for Brown. Like, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Yep.
But I love my starting roster. I'm happy.
Well, I can tell you, I definitely don't feel good giving you a C+ grade, because last year I gave you a C-, and then you won the whole lead. So
I did, and I did that streaming a quarterback. And your opinion is that having a strong quarterback is the make or break. And like, right. Well, I get it.
Yeah, but it was not the case last year.
No, so that might have been an anomaly, because I would generally agree with you that having that double digit projection at the top of your roster really does it's a power stance, you know what I mean, in the matchup.
Yeah,
it does. I agree. All right, that takes us over to Scott, I believe.
Yep. Scott kept Michael Pittman for $8, and then Scott didn't spend more than $30 on a player during the draft. I think that's the first thing jumps out to me. He was a guy, you know, Scott was a drafter who I actually asked Brock during the draft, like, is Scott okay? Because I haven't seen him bid once. And I felt like that was after like 2 or 3 rounds of players going. He was not pulling the trigger on anyone. And then he started jumping in. He might have taken like 3 in a row, you know, pretty soon after that. So he was being patient. He was waiting, looking for the values. And so it's interesting when you have a draft like this, ends up everything's pretty flat. You know, you end up with a lot of guys kind of in that same range. I don't know if there's, you know, if it was a snake draft, I don't know if he has any guys who would be a first or second round pick, right. But he ends up with a lot of guys who would be, you know, 3rd through 8th round picks, or something like that. And so it's a, you know, crazy thing about auction. You end up with very different looking teams. What do you think about this construction for Scott's team?
Yeah, well, at one point you threw up a wellness check for Scott because he just hadn't bought any players yet. He wasn't even really, we weren't sure he was bidding. We want to make sure his tech was set up and he was in the action. And so I don't know. I think there's, we've seen benefit in waiting a few picks. And, you know, let the money kind of drain out on the bigger players, the economy balance out, the inflation kind of find its space. And then at the same time, we've seen in history that actually the first couple of players usually go for undervalue. Like, people in our league have been a little timid to spend money early. And so I do think there's value in jumping in quick and taking hold you know, grab life by the horns. It's a metaphor, but it actually happens. And my sense here with Scott's is that his draft really is like, I look at it and go, there's a lot of names on it that I like from a sense of high potential, like high upside in that regard. Like it's all like, if I were to give a word to his team, I'd say it's about breakout. Like there's breakout potential, Flowers, Waddle, like there's breakout potential. But with the heavier reliance on that, I just don't see that, especially with his running back depth or lack thereof, I just don't see his team being as solid as it could. I feel like he just missed out on the draft a little bit.
Yeah, I think I'm right there with you. The ceiling seems limited here, where we talked about, you know, Jared Lorenz has a high floor team. This seems to be one that is like a low ceiling team, unless that you get a surprise breakout. Like, I really like Waddle. He could be awesome, yeah. But you kind of need Tyreek Hill to like be out. You know, you would need something to break the right way. You know, I could be wrong about a lot of these players. There's just nothing here that is super exciting to me. I don't think Zay Flowers or Michael Pittman are, you know, guys who can sustain a whole season of, you know, being the alpha wide receiver on their team where they're getting, you know, 12 targets a game and, you know, turning that into, you know, over 100 yards and 2 touchdowns with regularity. And that's kind of what you would need to, you know, get that sort of breakout player to carry the team here. So I'm not loving the team overall. Usually the really balanced teams without the firepower are harder to stomach or to love right out of the draft. So I will give Scott a C grade on this one.
I gave him a C+, and the plus came from the player that I do like the potential breakouts that I do like there, Waddle, Flowers.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. All right. Charles is up next. He had an interesting draft, to say the least. He kept Puka Nacua for $1, which was a very obvious keeper selection for him. Lots of value saved there. He took Justin Jefferson and Cooper Kupp, Travis Kelce, Kyron Williams, and Josh Allen. At that point, he was basically out of money.
Out of dough.
There's really nothing else to remark on from his draft. You know, there's a lot of Rams in there, keeping Puka, then drafting Cooper Kupp and taking Kyron Williams. I think Justin Jefferson for 62 is solid, and he's one of the best wide receivers in the league, no matter who's throwing to him. Even though he doesn't have Kirk Cousins this year, I think he'll be just fine. Josh Allen for 23 doesn't have Stephon Diggs this year, but I think he'll still be fine. Yep. Right there. Yep. I think maybe if there weren't three Rams here, if it wasn't Kyron, Puka, and Kupp here, and it was different guys in that kind of similar tier, I would like the team a lot more. But with it being three Rams, it does make you wonder, how much can those three guys produce at the same time? And so does that really limit the ceiling for Charles's team?
That's the right question. I look at his team and I'm like, oh man, Charles, like if you would have just showed me this team without telling me who drafted it, I would have lost money because I would not have bet Charles. Like, this has never looked like Charles's team before, ever, because there's no like sense of play behind the play. You know what I mean? He's not working an angle of a trade setup or a monopoly or like a stack studs and duds in one particular setup. This team just looks like he just bought big players for his positions and he's going to ride them or trade them. And that's it. Like, he's like, I executed really well like that. And honestly, like, his values look really good to me. Like, even getting Travis Kelce for under $30, that's a good job, man. Like, that's great. Josh Allen for 23 is a pretty good deal. Like, I don't think that that is overpaying for him. So I don't think he executed a poor draft at all. He just doesn't have any kind of security behind. And now, that's not to say he doesn't have intentionality. Like, Tyreek Hill, like, sure, you're gambling on, I said Tyreek Hill, I meant Taysom Hill. Taysom Hill, you're gambling on that, you know, as a hybrid player. He's like the one player in the NFL that's got two positions, and or three sometimes, because he can kick the ball, I've seen. But my my concern for him is, like you said, I just don't think that he has any kind of sustainability here. And that I do think he'll have some really high boards because he'll have two players go off the same week and he'll win with 150 or 160, 170 points. But I don't see this. Like, I think he's going to have to claw his way into the playoffs because of his makeup. That's what I think. At the same time, I gave him an A minus because he's got all the name power and the value. So A minus is my grade.
Interesting. I will argue with you on one point. It does look like a Charles draft to me. Where? In that it has a really strong core.
Okay.
You know, like, really strong core. Like, that's usually what Charles ends up with, is 4 to 5 players that are like, yep, those are studs. And then the rest of the team ends up usually looking like big question marks. But normally the way it does that is by spending big early on, you know, some of the top right. guys. I don't see Tyron Williams as a top guy. I don't see Cooper Kupp as a top guy anymore. So if you told me he's got Josh Allen, Justin Jefferson, and Travis Kelce to go with Puka Nacua, that makes a lot of sense to me. But then the $74 he spent on Tyron Williams and Cooper Kupp, I would have expected him to use that differently based on how he's built teams in the past. And so I think I have some question marks in his court because there's a lot of Rams there and I'm not sure how good the Rams are going to be. And there's only one football. And he's stacked Vikings before. He's done that where he had, you know, Dalvin Cook and Justin Jefferson and maybe the tight end too. Maybe, I forget. But you know, he's stacked Vikings before, I know. And so it's not totally out of the ordinary for him to stack Rams. It's just, I think the core could have been a little bit stronger, and then the question marks are big question marks beyond that. He's had $1 players who I never would have expected hit, and you know, and maybe DeMario Douglas is that guy this year.
That's fair.
You know, it's been Antonio Brown with Tampa Bay in the past. Last year, it was Puka Nacua, who I honestly, when we drafted last year, I didn't know Puka Nacua's name, but Charles hit him, and it was an amazing hit. And so, you know, maybe he's going to get that from one of these guys this year, and it's going to totally surprise me. But I'd rather stick to, you know, the overall feeling I have here. Just as a team coming out of the draft, which I feel like that's the caveat I have to say. This is, like, as a team drafted, I'd rather go with a C grade here. But understanding, as he does every year, Charles can hit on these unknown guys, and then there's always, you know, waiver wire activity that can help make the team a lot better than what it looks like coming out of the draft.
Yeah. Yep. Agreed.
All right. Moving over to Chewy's team, he kept a tight end at Sam Laporta for $2. He's got Breece Hall and Joe Mixon at running back. Then he's got DK Metcalf, Malik Nabers, Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin at wide receiver. Throw in other running backs there, Ramondre Stevenson and Devin Singletary. And then at quarterback, he has Dak Prescott and Caleb Williams. So seems like an overall very solid team to me. What do you think about Chewy's draft this year?
Yeah, I'd say solid, but not overly flashy. And we have discussed how Fantasy Pros and some of the more higher-end draft analyzers really do value the balance of it. And even if you look at Chewy's spending breakdown, he's one of the only managers that he doesn't have a $1 player. And I'm really impressed by that. His bench totaled, actually, even going down from kicker below, he spent $31 across his kicker, defense, and six bench positions, which is impressive. I mean, that's an average of $4 a position across the seven positions down below kicker. And again, he saved his money, I guess, to get exactly who he wanted. He spent $5 on Dobbs. He spent $8 on Spears. That was super annoying because I wanted Spears real bad. $2 on Musgrave, $3 on Myers. So yeah, he really, really demonstrated the discipline to have the dollars for who he wanted later in the draft. And where that, of course, hurts you is on your firepower on the top end. And so you have to kind of compromise, and you get older names like Mixon and Metcalf, which it's funny that we, you know, would call Metcalf a lesser stud at this point. Neighbors, Cooper, even Dak Prescott is a cheaper quarterback at this point, which I think it was a pretty big drop off. I don't remember what was spent on him last year, but I feel like it was a lot higher than $8. So all that to say, I think that Chewy probably could speak with a lot of intent and strategy on his targeted players here, because he executed a draft that he wanted, and he still has balanced running backs. Like, he's got upside here, Hall, Stevenson. But he doesn't have a top QB, as we've discussed. And I'm going to say that that matters this year. And, I think as a team rostered, I gave him a B.
Like Chewy's team, actually. I think, you know, I think it's a good draft. I think, you know, Malik Nabers is a big wild card for me. It seems that he's, you know, right up there in terms of a rookie wide receiver talent level. And he has a, you know, ton of opportunity because there's no one else who can catch the ball in New York. And I think the question there is the quarterback going to be able to throw it to him? you know, are they going to be a good enough team that he'll, you know, have this,
are they, be able to are actually the fans get that opportunity? Going to knife him in the parking lot? That's really the first question. Yeah.
So, but I think, you know, Nabers is the guy who has to make, you know, have the breakout in terms of the wide receivers. I think everyone else that we know what they are, like DK Metcalf, Amari Cooper, Chris Godwin. I think we know what they are at this point, and he drafted them for about what they are. Mm-hmm. So then it's like, is Malik going to break out? Is Nabers going to break out there for the Giants as a rookie? Is Breece Hall going to break out and stay healthy for the Jets? I mean, he came back way stronger than I expected last year, and now fully healthy. Is he going to just tear it up? Is he the new, you know, Christian McCaffrey level player?
Yeah,
he could be. Joe Mixon was a great value, you know, for as long as he lasts at this point. And then I think Dak is a pretty solid quarterback. The Cowboys, I think they tend to end up being good enough that he's going to have some good games. And then even having Caleb Williams as a second quarterback, I think is a good pick because there's so many weapons for him to throw to in Chicago. And like you said, he's got a deep team. You know, he spent money on the bench, and none of those players stand out as like, oh, why'd you spend money on that guy? There seems to be, a reason behind every dollar spent here. So I like this team. May lack some of the upside, but there's potential there, just in the unknown of, you know, what are Nabers and Hall going to be. So I'm going to give him an A-.
All right. Good grade. I believe that takes us to the auto draft league. Michael Fitz is who that takes us to.
Yeah. And
this is a tough one to review because of that.
Right. Yeah. Let's not spend too much time on it, but I'll just real quick, my thought is it's not bad for an auto draft.
I was going to say the exact same thing. And no disrespect meant to Fitz and dealing with the loss of a family member. Of course, we're going to prioritize that. And so not reflective of where his priorities needed to be by any stretch of the imagination. But yeah, this draft was not, and I dog the auto draft maybe because I just hate how it impacts everything else. But he doesn't actually have an unstartable team here.
Right. Yeah. I think there's very little upside because, you know, him basically misses out on all the big players. But he has enough here that he's going to put out a decent team, especially at the start of the season. And then, so he has enough to work with to get a good start on the season. And it's kind of up to him from here.
Yeah. I do like Lamar Jackson on top for $21. So good job, auto bidder.
those quarterbacks were cheaper than expected this year.
Seriously.
So, yeah, I mean, honestly, I'd give him a B minus.
I gave him a B minus, yeah.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, that's going to take us over to you, Pete, as draft order number 8. You started up with Jalen Hurts as your QB. You've got McCaffrey as your big pick this year. Congratulations. And I'm interested to know kind of some of your strategy there after the fact with your wide leanings over RB. A lot of notable names here. There's some classic, like, Peter Elwood names on your team for sure. You know, some not necessarily tried and true, but definitely like, all right, yep, those are on brand for sure. And then there's some riskier targets too. So I'll be curious to kind of hear what was your strategy going into this. Were you planning on just going balls to the wall for McCaffrey this year?
No, actually not at all. But I think Lorenz put a $69 bid on McCaffrey, and this was early in the draft. And I was looking at it like, well, he shouldn't go for $69 this early in the draft. He was the fourth player put up. So it was CD Lamb, and then Brian put up a kicker, and then Justin Jefferson, and then Christian McCaffrey. So it was really like the third player who went. And, you know, at that point, like, there's still all the dollars out there from, you know, people's keepers. Factoring that in, it's like, well, he shouldn't go for 69 at this point, especially because Lamb just went for 70. So, you know, I value McCaffrey as more than Lamb, so I put a $70 bid on him.
Yeah.
Fully expecting he would bid up to, like, 75.
75
or so.
Maybe 74, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And then no one bid. And it was just, the room went quiet, and all of a sudden I had McCaffrey. So, I had, you know, I made two moves after that. One was to put his backup running back into my queue immediately.
Uh-huh.
And him for later in the draft because, you know, it's like, I think I had McCaffrey three seasons ago. I forget what year I had him. I had him a year. It was not the right year to have McCaffrey when I had him.
He went down like week 3.
Yeah. And then, I've had bad luck with high priced running backs. I had Nick Chubb last year, and then his knee exploded. And then I had Jonathan Taylor the year before, and he was a combination of not good and hurt. And
you're like a Madden cover.
I was not expecting to take McCaffrey. And once I had him, I was like, this probably isn't going to work out that well. So I need to make sure I get his backup running back. And then the second.
Who I don't see in your lineup.
No, I had to trade for him. But I got him. I had to trade for him, though.
All right.
Other people were sitting with more dollars at the end of the draft than me and sniped him from me, even though I tried to wait as long as I could before nominating him.
Yeah.
And then after that, I was like, okay, there are going to end up being values later in this draft, and I need to just wait. I just need to be patient and wait and look for values. And that ended up being my mentality. It ended up being a little bit of a miscalculation because the values really, I feel like, never came, you know, in a really strong way. So I'm glad I ended up getting Ja'Marr Chase early as well.
Yeah.
That's a little scary to spend $127 on two players and then build the rest of the team with the, you know, remaining.
It's a neat trick. It's hard to do for sure.
The remaining 72 that I had, but go ahead.
I was going to say, and you still had money for your bench. Like, you spent $14 on it, and I was impressed that you had the money to do that.
Yeah, so I think I just, that mentality helped me to be pretty disciplined throughout the rest of the draft. I really didn't bid on anyone unless I was putting bid where it's like, if I win this, I'm getting them for a value, is what my mentality was. So I was putting a lot of bids out there, but it was like, once it got within, you know, $2 to $3 of where I thought they should go, I stopped because it's like, okay, it's not a streaming value for me anymore.
Okay.
And you know, guys like Mixon and Davante Adams, they were showing up as streaming values for me, but I was like, I'm just not excited about them, and I gotta be pretty selective about who's on my team at this point. So yeah, I'd rather have Terry McLaurin because, you know, he's one of my guys.
And I'd argue about that, but I don't have a reason not to. But like, he's good. Like, yeah, I've picked him up before too, but. And that also so explains
I'd rather have
like
him for
Njoku,
13 than Mixon for 12.
Exactly.
And,
like I say, that explains thing, so. Those picks for sure. Like that makes perfect sense.
Yeah, and then so then Njoku, I was happy to get him for 8 because you know, I was looking at getting you know, the tight ends were getting pretty picked over, and you know, Evan Ingram went for 15.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Jake Ferguson went for 10. Dalton Schultz went for 9. George Kittle went for 13. There, like, a lot of these guys who are kind of in that range that were going for more than I thought they would. Like, I had all those guys in a separate Kittle. Those were more like $4 or $5 players. So it was like, okay, I need to actually, you know, spend some of my remaining dollars on tight end. So I was happy to get Njoku for 8 because he does still have some upside there. And then I had to basically fill out the rest of the team. You know, once I had, I was really happy with Hurts for 17 at quarterback. I thought that was a great value. And so I was happy to get him. Once I had Hurts, McCaffrey, Tank Dell, once I had Chase McLaurin. So once I basically had those 5, I was really just trying to fill the rest of the team with who's going to be, you know, someone who can contribute in week 1, and then who's going to give me some wide receiver depth. And so that's not what I went with. And like I said, I didn't really have a set plan. Didn't really have a set expectation. So it was harder for me to be disappointed with the outcome. And I'm happy with the team overall.
Well, I just want you to know, I think your discipline really shows. Like that is my takeaway from your draft is going, okay, had I been in this position and run out of money early, I don't know if I would have had the discipline to not panic and try to backfill my running back situation and have no money for any pickups after, you know, even tight end. Like I'd be ending up with whatever draft order position kicker I could pick up, and that's it. And instead, you still were able to convert across your depth there, and it really saved your draft for sure. And you got some good value, and you chose well on who to target for value in light of where these other players you've mentioned were going dollar wise. And I really like Hurts for 17, and I think McCaffrey for 70 is actually a little cheap. So I think you had some money left over after that. It just surprised me that you went after him, or that you got him, because I've never seen that risky of a running back, you know, injury prone running back at the top of your draft that early in a draft, especially. So, but I think you made lemonade for sure. And I gave you an A minus for your draft. I think there's plenty of upside. Your RB depth is the concern, but you've got a good team.
Thank you. As I looked at my team, I'm kind of hard for me to find a hole in it. So I think I'm gonna follow you with the same draft grade. I'm gonna give myself an A minus. I probably would give myself some of the same feedback I've given others. Is I think it lacks a little upside. And there's also some risk. You know, I think Jamar Chase is holding out right now. McCaffrey may not be fully healthy to start the season. I'm not sure. You know, there's definitely a risk here. You know, who knows? Jalen Hurts might be a more injury prone quarterback just because he runs the ball more and they're still doing the tush push thing. You know, he did get his leg stepped on in a long way or something like that. But I'll just try to ride it while I can and hope Jamar Chase works things out with Cincinnati where he actually plays, you know, a week from today. We'll see.
Yeah, we will. All right. Well, that's going to take us over to Fresh Fish, Franca, and forgive the alliteration. That was not intentional or planned, but welcome to the newest manager jumping into our, what we like to consider a very intense auction draft of the greatest fantasy football league in the world. Michael Franca has come in with what I think is some strong wide depth, targeting that and kind of leaning into our our PPR format. He's going to have some risky running backs that we can discuss. What is your overall take of Franca's team?
I think I look at his team and I'm like, how do you have this much money to spend? He kept Kyle Pitts for $12, but then he's got like Mahomes for 21, Barkley for 34, Kamara for 20, Nico Collins for 41, DJ Moore for 26, and Debo Samuel for 28. I just look at those numbers and I say them out loud. That sounds like it's more than $200 already. So it's like, what rookie benefit did he get here that he gets to spend more money than the rest of us? But I think that just shows that he did a good job building out a solid team. I think this is another one where I'd say there isn't a glaring hole to me. Maybe the flex spot's still a little weak when you look at Ezekiel Elliott, Tyler Lockett. Both those guys, I say that, you know, those could be weak spots. Those are guys that probably no one's really excited about, but those are also guys who, their teams could just love them and just throw, you know, give them the ball all the time. Like the Cowboys could just, you know, make Zeke their workhorse for as long as he can at the start of the season. Tyler Lockett could be just as good as he's always been in Seattle, even though everyone wants to crown, you know, JSN as the next wide receiver in Seattle. Lockett could still just as well be that guy. So I think it is a team with very few to no holes. I like Mahomes this year. He's probably never had as good of weapons as he has this year overall. Yeah. So I love Mahomes this year. And then I was surprised Nico Collins went for 41. I was surprised DJ Moore went for 26. I was surprised Debo went for 28. Those are all probably more expensive than I would expect for those guys. But when you build out three really solid wide receivers, great, as long as it doesn't hurt you too much somewhere else. And it didn't hurt Franca too much anywhere else. So I like this team.
I think it only hurt him on his bench, honestly. Like, he just spent money on a starting roster and went, no, that'll be that. My comment about running backs, and he's got Barkley and Kamara, which is like, yeah, at what point in recent history were those both number one draft picks for auction, you know, catch passing running backs? Yeah. Like, so the upside is potentially there. Like if between the two of them, I could see Kamara having a comeback season for sure. I am genuinely like, now that I'm looking at it on paper here in a spreadsheet, seeing Mahomes for $21, I'm kind of like, wait, who, how did, what? That, really? That's kind of cheap considering his upgrades in Kansas City. Like, how did we let him get away with that? So I guess we're being kind to the fresh fish.
Especially in our league, our scoring settings are really geared toward Mahomes.
Yeah.
It, very, very easy to be the number one quarterback because we do 5 points for a passing touchdown, and the standard across the, you know, fantasy football is really 4 points for passing touchdown. So because Kansas City throws so much, and why shouldn't they have Mahomes, they throw so much, and he has
scrambles all the time.
He actually has like three legitimate wide receivers this year plus Kelsey. I would not be surprised at all if he's the number one quarterback in our league.
Yeah.
And I think that will help Franca a lot. So I gave him an A minus as well.
I give him a B plus, but yeah. Did I say A? I give him a B plus.
No, I've given a couple of other A minuses. So referring to my own grades. I don't think you had said yours for him.
Got it. B plus only because his team stops at his starting roster.
All right, let's move on to Chris Windsor. He kept Jonathan Taylor for 27. And then he also took Tony Pollard and Jerome Ford as other running backs. He's got Anthony Richardson at QB. And then Marvin Harrison Jr., A.J. Brown, Rashee Rice, Brian Thomas at wide receiver. Big hole here for Chris is that Isaiah Likely is his tight end. The only tight end he took was Isaiah Likely, who would be a really awesome pick if Mark Andrews was hurt or unable to play. But going into week one, this doesn't look so good to have such a big hole in a starting roster spot. So what do you think about how Chris builds his team and you know, especially considering the tight end spot here?
Well, I mean, that's a fair concern. I'm actually more concerned about his lack of depth behind Taylor and running back. I think that that is equally a question. And I do think that that's why Fantasy Pros was so hard on his ranking, is that factor plus the tight end. So this team is wide receiver stack, though, and I think he built a really good core. Even Richardson is a good nod at top. And he's got more depth in his bench and a lot of intentionality there. But ultimately, I do think that he's got his work cut out for him on the running back side. And as you said, his tight end is kind of like a potential goose egg week to week if he doesn't patch that up. So I gave him a C+.
I think I like his quarterback. I like Anthony Richardson a lot. Mm-hmm. I agree that RB2 spot is question mark, but Tony Pollard did start to look better towards the end of last season. I think Jerome Ford will be the guy in Cleveland for probably at least the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season. So I think that's fine for me in terms of what he has at running back. I like his wide receivers. I think I was surprised Rashee Rice went for 31. Yeah. Seemed like a guy where there's question marks and maybe that would drive his price down. It did not do that at all. I was surprised AJ Brown went for 54, especially that there was such a big gap between AJ Brown and Devonta Smith, because I don't see them as too different there in Philadelphia, but there's like almost a $30 price gap between them. But I like Marvin Harrison for 31, similar to the Malik Nabers. But Marvin Harrison actually has a good quarterback throwing in the ball, so he could really actually explode as a rookie wide receiver for Arizona. So you know, I like everything he did here except for the tight end spot. And I like Brian Thomas that he drafted for $7. I don't like Christian Watson for $7, and so I would have expected like the dollars that went to Watson to go towards a tight end, and that probably would have bumped him up a whole letter grade for me. Yeah. You know, just that one trade off there. So I'm going to give him a B. For me, very close to a really solid draft overall, but that tight end hole is tough to stomach.
Yeah, that's fair.
All right, we'll move on to Brock, who is your nemesis in this draft. The two of you just kept locking up, especially early on, where it seemed like no one else was bidding but you two. Like, you liked all the same players. So I thought that was really interesting. Brock kept Christian Kirk for $11. And then even looking at the top of his draft, he's got Jared Goff and Trevor Lawrence is his quarterback.
It's crazy because Goff was one of my number one QB picks too. Like, I was just like, are you, what did you, did I leave my notes in the locker room? What happened?
Nick Chubb was, I think, one of the first running backs he took, and took him for $2, which I don't know if he's going to play much this year, but potentially an awesome keeper value depending on how he comes back from another major knee injury. But then he picked up five other running backs who I'd say are in that pretty decent RB2 range with DeAndre Swift, David Montgomery, Austin Eckler, Jonathan Brooks, Javonte Williams. So he's got lots of running back depth. It'll be interesting to see how he plays roulette each week to figure out which one he's starting. So he's got Kirk, Mike Evans, Keenan Allen, some old guys there at wide receiver, as well as T. Higgins. More of those guys who was like, well, I think we know what we're getting out of them.
That's right.
You know, is the cliff coming for them? Especially like Mike Evans and Keenan Allen, are they about to fall off? I'm not sure. And then I didn't mention Evan Ingram at tight end as well. What do you think?
I do think he's got like a classic team, as you're mentioning. And because of that, we know them. And I do believe, especially across his wide core, there's going to be consistency. I just don't know if it's going to have the reliability at a top end. Like, it's not necessarily like he's lacking kind of the elite side, I think. And I don't know how critical that will be for him. Maybe this is just going to be the little engine that could all the way through the regular season. It very well could be. But I think that, and well, actually, for that to happen, I do believe his wide receivers are going to have to outperform their expectations for kind of their age and their history. But that being said, I don't think it's necessarily a bad draft. He did not spend all of his money at the end of the day. And so I do think he missed out on an opportunity to maybe try to push the needle a little bit into more of a higher end in some tiers. So I think there's a missed opportunity there. But I can't critique him too heavily because apparently we hit the same playbook. So, but I gave him a B minus.
That's exactly the same grade I was penciling in for him here, a B minus. I'd say another one of those teams where there may not be a hole to point out here, but I don't think there's the upside either.
Right.
All right, Jared Fleming is the last team that we will look at today. He tapped Jahmyr Gibbs for $33. Pretty expensive for a keeper.
Yep.
All things considered. And I think this is his first year to keep him. So I was surprised that he was drafted for so much last year when looking at those keeper prices. And then he took Bijan Robinson for $55. He's got a couple older wide receivers now. Stephon Diggs for $19, Davante Adams for $27. And he's got Devontae Smith for $25. His quarterback is Kyler Murray, who for $10, I think is a great pick this year. He could be a top five quarterback for not top five quarterback dollars there. I also picked up some interesting depth with running backs like kind of the backups in Seattle and Atlanta. Not sure who the guy is going to be with the Chargers, but he's got Gus Edwards there. I think it started out as a pretty solid team. I think the depth fizzles out a little bit of just waiting for someone to get hurt.
Yeah, that is his biggest risk for sure. There's a lot of liability and injury. His top quarterback is recovering from an injury, but I still think he capitalized on the discount of that and got a really good quarterback for $10. I'm jealous of this draft, honestly. I look at his lineup. Even Robinson at 55 is a great deal. He's got a great strong running back core, great strong wide receiver core. It's just solid foundation really throughout his team. And like I'm jealous. Like he's got my tight end. He got him for only $3. Like that was my number one tight end right there. I was ready to spend $8 on. Friermuth? I always say Friermuth, Friermuth, on Friermuth there. And, I think he's got one of the stronger drafts overall, and it's frustrating because it's really good. And, he just seems to get away with these picks. And I don't know how he does it.
He does seem to, I would say Fleming and Chewy seem to every year be the serial value drafters, mm-hmm. where they keep walking away with these guys of like, wait, why did we let him go for that price? So Chewy's got Mixon and Fleming's got Davante Adams this year. And I think those were the two that jumped out the most to me of wait, why someone clicked the button. Why are we letting them go for these prices? Yeah. I can't do it, but someone else should.
Yeah.
So
yeah. Just bow out of the way for Lord Fleming. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know if I love the tight end or the flex or the two flex spots here, but definitely a solid team. I'm ready to give him a B.
I gave him an A-. I think that his weakness in tight end and maybe some unproven ground and in quarterback, like I think Murray has all the upside. Obviously, I think he's a stud, but I don't think I could give him like an A+ or an A coming out of the draft, even though my bitterness kind of like wants to in spite, but I do think it's an A- performance for sure.
All right. So if I'm looking at our draft grades, maybe we are also getting more experience and more mature and wiser. Here we gave no grade higher than an A-. We did. You gave yourself an A, but we didn't give out any other A's and no A+.
Oh.
And then we didn't give anything lower than a C. And I'm pretty sure every year we've always had like some C- and D's going on.
Yeah, we're going to fail somewhere.
We're definitely not being so bold in our job grades now, which is probably wisdom coming from age and experience here. I've got you giving out 6 B's and 2 C's and 4 in the A range. I gave out 3 in the A range, 6 in the B range, and 3 in the C range.
I think my grade was our only real spread discrepancy.
That's probably the biggest one. You had Charles as A minus. I gave him a C as well. So another similar gap on that one. So we're getting there. Pretty tight spread. I think it shows that it was a very competitive draft, and I think we're off to a good start for the league. I think the week one scores should all be pretty tight. We'll see how it goes.
Well, as you said, nobody failed this draft. There was even in the fact that we can say that, and there was an auto pick in there, is remarkable. But nobody failed this draft, and our overall competition is shifting. I like that the league is dynamic, that it ebbs and flows with the economy of value for different positions in the NFL and different strategies that are trending. And we have been in more of a consistent trend in the last few years because of how the valuation of especially high-end quarterbacks has been, and the franchise building around it. But ultimately, I really, really feel like our league is more true to fantasy aspect of fantasy football, meaning like at the end of the day, we are, you know, the ceiling of our skill is pretty tight, is what I'm trying to say. We're all in the same division of Rocket League fantasy football skill level here. And it's not like we're playing with the, you know, give me the rank of the elite champions who just we cannot compete with anymore. They're so far out of our league. It's like, yeah, we are all in the right division here. And from what I know from playing in other auction leagues in our, especially our same format, I can tell you we're better than a lot of people in auction draft format for sure. We are not just silver in our draft ranking grades for sure. We are definitely really, really strong. And that being said, it comes down to we're playing a game that's not really a game of skill, according to the Las Vegas Bureau of Gambling. It really is a game of chance, because ultimately we're on the, you know, backs of how many variables and how many humans playing the game of football. And so I do think that this season will be proven that the luck of the Irish will have to smile at the few of us who are going to make it to the playoffs and beyond, because this was a tight draft and great performance coming out of it. And we didn't even get to it. How many trades have there been in the last 24 hours? There's got to be a record. Like, we have been moving out there. So lots to come.
Yeah. And so I know this is a longer episode, so appreciate you for sticking with us. Those of you who are still listening, I just know that despite our busy schedules, despite our age and experience here, we are still very, very excited about jumping into this fantasy football season, and love engaging with the community that we have here.
I don't think that you can expect anything less other than some busyness and some challenging scheduling to come. We will make every effort to provide the highest quality of podcast commentary and consistency in its delivery here for the greatest fantasy football league in the world, because this is its podcast. He's Peter Elwood. I'm Seth Martin. Thanks for tuning in tonight.